Fan Hotline is presented by Sullivan Super Service, Pittsburgh's trusted plumbing and HVAC provider for over 50 years. Donnie in on this Football Friday. 2 more hours helping get you set for Steelers and Ravens Sunday night, Acrisure Stadium. Win or go home. The winner claims the AFC North. The winner gets a home playoff game in a setting the Steelers have not won in nearly 9 calendar years. Joining us now on the Fan Hotline is our guy Nick Kostos. You better you bet. Also with Westwood One Sports. Nick, I understand now with the new year, too, you have a new intro, so I didn't want to mess that up because I know it can be a mouthful.
Well, yeah, that thing's like War and Peace, man. Happy New Year to you and all the great listeners, and all the great Pittsburgh sports fans. Yeah, it's just like I think everyone's off for the holiday, so I'll just do it for everyone. That read should have been sent to you guys. I got it. Don't worry. You Better You Bet has moved time slots. I am now doing the show solo on Westwood One Sports from 9 a.m. to noon Eastern. You can find it in all the places you found the show originally, and way more radio stations nationwide now. So all the radio stations you were finding us previously, plus YouTube, plus Twitch, Sirius XM Channel 375, podcast form as well. Just search You Bet wherever you find your podcasts. So I just did 3 hours of radio, hopping on with you now. Happy Football Friday. Great to be on.
Man, they're going to have Stephen King writing that intro at some point here soon.
It's it's better than the Odyssey Sports Betting Insider one. I'll say that.
Well, I mean, the good thing, too, is the amount of exposure that you get. I mean, you know, that the amount of options that people have to take in your content, that's never a bad thing, Nick.
I'd say it's an awesome thing. Yeah, like way more distribution now than we had previously, which is awesome. So, yeah, I'm pretty bullish about kicking ass in 2026.
I want to ask you something first about the college football playoff. Austin and I are going to talk about that a little bit later on. Do you think there's something wrong with that format now that 2 years are complete of the quarterfinal round, at least? Teams are 1-7 when they get the bye to that quarterfinal round.
Didn't matter for Indiana. I mean, let's see what happens next year. I guess the thing that I would want, almost regardless of how this had went for the teams with the byes, I do think it's not that they're getting penalized, but I do think they should get a home game. And I understand that you want to play the neutral site games, keep like the Rose Bowl and the Sugar Bowl and like the Orange Bowl and the Cotton Bowl, which were the 4 quarterfinal games that were played over the last couple days. I kind of think like Indiana, and obviously no one's going to complain about playing in Pasadena at the Rose Bowl. Like Indiana should host that game. Should play Alabama in Indiana. Like Georgia should get that game at home against Ole Miss. So I guess that would be the one tweak I would want to make, would be more games on campus. Otherwise, Donnie, honestly, I think I will be in the minority here with my opinion. I think they should expand. I think there should be more than 12 teams. And I think, well, I like that for a couple selfish reasons. Like, I love games. I love to bet on games. I love to talk about the games. I love when there are more games. So I just generally like that. I like that myself, but I also am really digging this year. Doesn't this feel a little bit like a college basketball Final Four? And it's not quite like a couple years ago when there's like FAU and San Diego State in Miami. It's not like to that degree, even though Miami's in the Final Four of both. But Ole Miss, Miami, Oregon, and Indiana. This is a Final Four in college football right now without any of the perennial blue bloods. And I know Miami used to be one and Oregon's been good, but like Oregon is not in the class of Ohio State or Alabama or Georgia or some of the elite programs in college football. And I think this is awesome for the sport. And I think this is going to be the cherry on top of a delicious Sunday in what's been a great college football season. I can't wait for these games next week. I think this is great for the long-term health of college football to have upsets like this happen that could upend the apple cart, and we can get a Final Four like this where, and think about this, right? If there were a 4-team playoff, we would have had Indiana against Texas Tech. Imagine that stinker. And then Ohio State, Georgia, which we see these games every year. Like now we get something new. I think it's really awesome.
Yeah, I think that's a really good point. I mean, it is 4 teams that we aren't used to being in this spot, and it could very well be a national championship, or it, you know, will certainly be a national championship that we aren't used to. Talking to Nick Kostos, our guy from You Better You Bet, Friday is at noon. He joins us every single Friday during the football season. Two fun NFL games tomorrow, Nick. I thought the NFL and the networks did a good job of scheduling these. Every game that actually had some big implications got the standalone spots. How do you feel about the two games on the Saturday slate?
Well, we'll start with the Panthers and the Bucks, which we thought, Donnie, was going to be the NFC South Championship game. And just in case, and I apologize if you've spoken about this, but just in case anyone doesn't know, if Atlanta beats New Orleans on Sunday, then the result of this game doesn't matter. If Atlanta beats New Orleans, the Panthers win the NFC South. So Tampa could win tomorrow 100-0, which I'm not, they won't, but they could win 100-0 tomorrow. And if Atlanta beats New Orleans on Sunday, it doesn't matter. The Panthers win the division. So it's not like an NFC South championship game, but Tampa needs to win to give themselves a chance on Sunday and hope that New Orleans pulls the upset at Atlanta, which feels way more unlikely now with Chris Olave being ruled out for the game with a blood clot in his lung. He's expected to make a full recovery and play next season, but obviously bad news for Tyler Shuck and the New Orleans Saints. And bad news for Tampa. Do I think the Bucs can win, Donnie? I do. Can they win? Yes. They're a 3-point favorite in the game. The betting market says they're more likely to win the game than Carolina. But I would never bet on Tampa. The Bucs have won one game since the Dodgers won the World Series. Think about how long ago that was. They've won one game since Halloween. They're 1-7 in their last eight. The season has completely spiraled out of control. The players are talking in the locker room about needing to like look in the mirror and have some pride and professionalism. Doesn't sound great to me. So if I'm going to get a full three, and I am right now, I'll take the points with the Carolina Panthers, and maybe Tampa wins a close game. But I do think because of the Olave injury, the Falcons will beat the Saints on Sunday. The Panthers will end up winning the NFC South and being a huge home underdog on wild card weekend against either the Rams or the Seahawks is how that's going to shake out. Man. And in the night game tomorrow night for the NFC West, Donnie, the favorite is flipped now. So this is the NFC West title game. Winner gets home field advantage throughout the NFC playoffs. San Francisco is hosting the game. The Niners opened a 1.5-point home favorite. Seattle is currently a 1.5 or a 2-point road favorite. We don't know if the Niners are going to have star left tackle, future first ballot Hall of Famer Trent Williams. He's questionable. George Kittle's questionable, but he says he's going to play. Ricky Pearsall is questionable as well for San Francisco. And I like Seattle. I think the Seahawks are going to win this game. I am a little concerned about Sam Darnold, but if Darnold can't get it done against the bad San Francisco defense, like forget about Seattle in the playoffs. I think Seattle goes into San Francisco, wins the game, gets home field advantage. Give me the Seahawks tomorrow night, Donnie, in San Francisco.
And Seattle is, they're better on the road than they have been at home this year. 7-1. On the road against the spread. I mean, they have been a bet. I mean, they came into Pittsburgh and they won the game by 2 touchdowns early in the year, and that loss doesn't look nearly as bad as what it does now, Nick. Something with these two games.
That was the Caleb Johnson game, right?
Yes, it was. Yeah, it was.
That game, I bet the Steelers, that was really annoying.
And now Caleb Johnson has been a healthy scratch the last few weeks of the regular season. So that's
my dynasty fantasy football shares of Caleb Johnson. I felt really good about that. Like not looking great at the moment right now, moving forward.
Yeah. I feel like a lot of people were high on him too. So I can't even blame you for going there. And then, I mean, like there were actually thoughts, Nick, I don't know if you remember this or how like tuned in you were to just Pittsburgh specifically. There were thoughts going into the season of like, hey, this guy is going to take over the bulk of the carries by like the end of October. And now he's not even getting a helmet.
Well, absolutely. And look, I think this needs to be said. Part of that is the fact that Aaron Rodgers doesn't want to play with rookies, especially not a rookie running back who might get him killed in pass protection. So when Johnson obviously had that play against Seattle, I think that was a convenient reason to sit him. And to be fair, like Jaylen Warren and Kenny Gainwell have been really good. I am not saying Caleb Johnson's better than those guys. We don't know, quite frankly, running the ball, if he's better than those guys, because we haven't seen it. My sense is, if there were a different quarterback other than Aaron Rodgers, we would have seen way more Caleb Johnson this season. And I don't mean that as like an insult or a compliment. I think it's just like a statement of fact as far as Caleb Johnson's concerned.
With the two games tomorrow, out of the four coaches, one of them could very likely get canned, that being Todd Bowles. But the three other guys should all be in consideration for Coach of the Year when that award comes out. There are also a handful of other guys that you could name for that. It feels like that Coach of the Year award is more loaded than almost any year I can think of, Nick.
It's pretty amazing, right? I will say, I think if the Niners win, and I do like Seattle in the game, but I think if the Niners win, Kyle Shanahan wins Coach of the Year. Like, I think it's as easy as that. If the Niners win, Kyle Shanahan wins. Now, complicating things a little bit for Mike Vrabel, and Vrabel is the favorite right now in the market, a small favorite, minus 125, Shanahan is the second choice, is that if the Patriots win, and I think they're going to, I think Drake May is like just going to win MVP. Like, they will have won 14 games, they will be the 2 seed in the AFC, and Matthew Stafford and the Rams like cannot win the NFC West. And we can have a conversation about who's been better this season. The answer is probably Stafford, but I think May's just probably going to win. And do the Patriots get MVP and Coach of the Year in the same season? I don't know if they will. I guess my best guess would be is that Vrabel would just win if Shanahan loses. I don't think McDonald would win. I don't think Liam Cohen or Ben Johnson would win. It feels like it really comes down to tomorrow night. If Shanahan and the Niners win, I think Shanahan wins Coach of the Year. If he doesn't, I think Vrabel wins, assuming the Patriots win on Sunday. And they are a big favorite against Miami.
How far behind are guys like Liam Cohen and Ben Johnson in the betting market?
Liam Cohen is 20-1. Ben Johnson right now is 30-1. And I think Ben Johnson probably got eliminated. But if the Bears had beaten the Niners last week, so on the final play of the game, if the Bears score a touchdown, Ben Johnson's the second choice in the market right now. Like that would be the case. The problem with Liam Cohen in Jacksonville is that the Jaguars are likely to finish behind the Patriots. So I think they're not going to have as many wins as New England if New England wins. So I think like that's the problem with Liam Cohen, and Cohen was the guy that I bet before the season. So I think like that there are great candidates, but I think that's the reason why Vrabel and Shanahan stand above the rest right now in that particular market.
Nick, let's take a look at that big showdown Sunday night, AFC North Championship game. In Pittsburgh, right now, what I'm looking at, the Steelers are a 3.5-point home underdog against the Ravens in that game. What's your feeling on how that one goes down?
Do you like the Steelers?
I have that odd, like, they're going to get off the mat, you know, they're going to sit up like the Undertaker or like Michael Myers, and they're going to somehow claw their way to win this game because so many people are counting them out.
Okay. The betting market of the game is Baltimore 3.5-point. And I was just on the radio for 3 hours, so forgive me if I have this wrong. We don't know if TJ Watt's playing in the game yet, right? Like, that's still accurate?
Not officially, yeah. You're right.
Okay. But what's your guess?
My guess on how the, on if he'll
if he's going to play or not, if Watt plays or not.
I think he's going to play and maybe be limited to like 50% of the snaps.
Okay. I actually kind of agree with I agree with that. And obviously that's a big deal for the Steelers. I guess my concern, Donnie, and I bet the Steelers to make the playoffs before the year. I bet them to win the division. Like, I want them to win the game. Like, I'm rooting for them to win the game. I don't know how they're scoring points without Metcalf. And I don't know if we talked, Metcalf can't do what he did. I despise that Lions fan. With the fire of 1,000 suns. He is like the biggest loser of all time, that guy. And like Metcalf can't do what he did, but that Lions fan is a grade A, capital L loser. I don't know how they're scoring in the game. And we saw it last week against the Browns defense, right? Where the offense works if you have Metcalf, or if you have Devontae Adams, or if you have Garrett Wilson, like Rodgers did with the Jets. I don't know how the offense is working without DK Metcalf. Where if you're the Ravens, like, why wouldn't you just run the ball with Derrick Henry, have Lamar keep the ball out of harm's way, punt the football as many times as you need to? How are the Steelers scoring? I'm not trying to be a hater at all. I hope they win. I don't know what the path is for them to score enough points to win the game. Unless Lamar makes a couple brain-dead turnovers and they have a defensive touch, which is possible, right? It's possible. Lamar's had some wacky plays this year. He hasn't been great. Make me pick the winner of the game. I'll take Baltimore to win. Probably a close, low-scoring game. It gives me no pleasure to say that. I do think the Ravens will win on Sunday night.
How do you feel about the total at 41?
Under. I think it'll be like a really cagey game. I don't know if the Steelers can score enough to get it over. And my guess is that Baltimore has a pretty conservative game plan offensively, knowing that the Steelers are going to be limited without Metcalf. I think Baltimore will play not to screw up, and I don't know if Pittsburgh has a ton of upside offensively. I think we're looking at a 20-17 final score in favor of the Ravens. I hope I'm wrong. So Steelers fans, if I'm wrong, like, I win if I'm wrong about this. I would love to be wrong, but I do think Baltimore is going to win.
There we go. Nick Kostos, you better you bet. Nick, thanks for taking the time, man. Awesome stuff as always. We'll talk to you again next week.
Really appreciate it. Wishing everybody a happy new year, and Minimal Sweats winning bets the absolute very best of luck.
There he goes. Nick Kostos, and I can handle the outro. It has been communicated to me. That was the host of You Better You Bet, which can now be heard weekdays on Westwood One Sports from 9 a.m. to noon Eastern Time. You can listen on the Odyssey app, the Westwood One app, and radio stations nationwide. So Nick has the Ravens winning 20-17 on Sunday night. By the number I'm looking at, the Steelers would cover via the hook in that game. I want to get the vibe from you out there, how you feel going into this game. 412-928-9370. Do you think the Steelers have a chance? Do you want the Steelers to win the game? Because we get the vibe from people of, well, who cares if they win? They're going to lose in the playoffs next week anyway. I feel like there should be some excitement. It's an AFC North championship game, and it's in Pittsburgh, and it's in prime time. It's the final game of the NFL regular season, game 272 on their schedule. It is Steelers and Ravens for all the marbles in the division. 412-928-9370 to join the conversation. Matt is in the North Hills. We'll get him involved. What's up, Matt?
Hey, thanks for taking my call. I definitely want them to win, no doubt about that. But as I was telling the screener, I've had season tickets for years, and I think that what I saw beginning last year with San Francisco and when Baltimore came to Pittsburgh, never have I seen the opposing team in our stadium with such numbers before. So I think that's going to tell the story tomorrow, but I treat it as entertainment, and anybody I take to the games, I've had season tickets for 40 years. Anytime that I take somebody, they love the entertainment factor. So I think we'll be entertained, obviously a Pittsburgh Steelers fan, so I want them to win. But I think it'll tell based on who's in our stadium. If there's a lot of Baltimore people in our stadium, we're going to lose.
Well, I mean, I think the Steelers are never a shortage of entertaining when it is a game that has to come down to the wire. Maybe it is not the most aesthetically pleasing football game every single time. But if you need to find a team that is going to, in almost any case, have the football game down to the final moments, it is probably the team in Pittsburgh, whether they win or lose. Now we have games like the Bills game where they got blown out, but we also have seen games like the Dolphins game, for instance, where they've won via a blowout. Very few times is it just a ho-hum football game. They always manage to make it closer than it needs to be if they win. And even in games where maybe they shouldn't win, you think of that Lions game, you get one of the most chaotic, exciting finishes that the league has seen all season. 412-928 9370. Bob is next. What's up, Bob?
Hey, Donnie. Happy New Year, brother.
Thanks. You too. What's up?
I'm a Steeler fan, obviously. I'm optimistic. I'm a little nervous, but I think what would be kind of neat, I think they're holding out for TJ Watt for a game time decision. They introduced the defense coming out the out of the tunnel. TJ comes out last. The crowd gets fired up. I think they wear all the black uniforms with the black pants. It should be a, you know, an energizer. I don't know. I'm just thinking out loud. I think it hopefully the fans get behind the team and no boos or, and, you know, no booing. Let's kind of get behind the team.
Yeah, I mean, I think the only way, and thanks for the call, Bob, the only way that we do get the venom that took place in that game against Buffalo is if things go south early or we are near the end of the game and say, you know, I don't know, let's say for the sake of exercise, the score is like 17 to 10 or 17 to 13 and Baltimore scores with a few minutes to go, then I think you start to really get some of the negativity out of the crowd. You're going to get a lot of people leaving, first off, but they will make their voices heard as they leave. If it is a two-score game late, if Baltimore goes up on them big early, you're going to get that as well. I don't think we get that, though, at least early. I do not think that Baltimore will just jump down their throat and be up like two or three scores right out of the gate. I do not think that is happening. By the way, we do have an update. Jameson Hensley, who covers the Ravens for ESPN and WBAL in Baltimore, he says Lamar is practicing today. This is the first time in 2 months that he has participated in a full week of practice, so he is all set to go for the AFC North title game Sunday night in Pittsburgh. We wait to hear how TJ Watt looks. I think he's going to play. It appears as if most people around the team think he is going to play. But it also feels like, okay, he's not going to play his typical 97% of the snaps. It'll be 50 to 60%, maybe 65% on the high side. 412-928-9370. Aaron is in Uniontown. What's up, man?
Hey, Donnie, how are you?
Good. What's going on?
Nothing. So, first, my feelings about the game, I'll be honest, I'm completely apathetic when it comes to this game. What do they win or lose? You know, we all sit here and talk about, you know, if they win the game, what happens? If they lose the game, what happens? I don't think, regardless if they lose, I don't think Mike Tomlin's going anywhere, so we're not looking at any changes. My question for you is, what makes you think that the Ravens won't come out and embarrass them out the gate, kind of like the Browns did? I maybe it won't be as bad as the Browns did in 2020, but you know, what makes you believe that the Ravens won't come out and just drop kick them right in the face and then have the fans booing out the start of the game?
I just don't think it's the style of game that these two teams really ever play. Now, the playoffs last year was a different story. If this was an actual playoff game, and I know it basically is, but we're not actually in the playoffs, I would have much, much less faith in the Steelers actually winning the game, and I would expect the Ravens to jump out to a two or three score lead early. Austin, I don't know if you saw the stat on this. Mike Tomlin against the Ravens when he's an underdog at home. A home underdog against the Ravens. I don't know if this graphic was wrong that I saw it. It was up on ESPN earlier. He is 7-1.
Really?
7-1.
Would not have expected that.
So, I mean, you could double check that if I'm wrong on it. But that's one of the reasons. I just don't think it'll be, hey, the Ravens come right out and they're up 17-0 by the time we reach the end of the first quarter. I don't think we're seeing that on Sunday night. 412-928-9370. David is in Houston, Texas. What's up, David?
Donnie Football, what's happening? I listened to you on the Odyssey app, and Andrew Filippone, a good fan of mine from Pittsburgh. I listened to him as well.
Oh, thank you. What's going on, man?
Yeah, I'm a big Houston Texans fan here down in Texas, and the winner of Monday night's game will take on the Houston Texans in the first round.
And you want? I'm going to guess that you're going to feel pretty good about your Texans either way.
Well, you talking about the winner of Monday night's game?
Yes, I'm saying, like, you as a Texans fan, you probably got to be feeling pretty good about whoever comes out of this game facing your favorite team.
Well, Donnie Football, heck yes. Yes. I personally, I would like to play the your Pittsburgh Steelers. And I have a personal fan, friend of mine that's from Houston, is a Pittsburgh Steelers fan. So I will root for the Steelers personally. I do not want to face the Baltimore Ravens. And the reason being is because their fans are so just like the Cowboy fans. You know what? You know Dallas Cowboy fans?
Yes.
They're split image. The Baltimore Ravens fans are the split image of the Dallas Cowboy fans. I hate their fans.
Well, David, I would say this. I like the Texans, too, against, at least if you ask me right now, whoever won the game Sunday night, I would think that the Texans would have the upper hand. The Texans' defense is superb. Superb. I think it's the best defense in football in 2025. And even though we've seen some rocky games from C.J. Stroud since his rookie year, the guy has managed to win playoff games since he's been in the league. And that says something. D'Amico Ryan, same thing as the head coach. That defense, if the Steelers can't get going, if the Ravens were to play the Texans and couldn't get going, yeah, I'd probably like the Texans because that defense is going to travel no matter where they have to play, whether it be Baltimore or Pittsburgh. Just ahead of 12:40, time to make that smart call to Buell Insurance, 724-443-5610. Donnie Football, solo on this Football Friday. No Joe Starkey across from me. Our guy Austin Bechtold is here, however, so you have two out of the three that you usually have on a Football Friday. And the late, great Meatloaf once said, two out of three ain't bad. You hear that music. The first one of 2026. It is time for a Bechtold breakdown. Austin?
It is time, Donnie, for the Bechtold breakdown brought to you by Southside Plumbing and Heating. It's January 2nd, 2026. Happy New Year, everyone. If you were an Indiana sports fan like 2 years ago, Donnie, and you were just waking up on January 2nd, 2024, and I told you that your football team would be number one in the country, the only undefeated team in the country, number one and destroying Alabama, what would you tell me?
That you're insane.
Yeah. And probably that, you know, you need to go to an insane asylum or something.
You need to be in a padded room.
I think Indiana is going to run away with this thing, Donnie.
I kind of do too. I mean, man.
They play Oregon again, and you know what happens when you play a team a second time? We did see that with Alabama and Oklahoma, but, man, I just think that they're so talented. They're loaded everywhere. They're so well coached by Cignetti. And
I think it's going to be Indiana and Miami.
Yeah, I do too. And Trinidad Chambliss played incredible last night for Ole Miss. But that would be a home game for Miami. Because it's at the Orange Bowl.
Oh, I didn't think of that.
They're playing the national championship in Miami Gardens. And could you imagine Indiana? So their road to the playoff is you beat Alabama, you beat Oregon twice, and then you beat Miami in a de facto road game.
It would be one of the more impressive college football seasons in a while. I mean, you think back to the one that Joe Burrow's LSU team had.
Yeah, that 19 team.
I mean, you can think back to, you know, other great undefeated seasons. I mean, Miami had, you know, some of those in the early 2000s. They had some of those back in their heyday. If Indiana would pull that off, they would be, what, 16-0? Is that correct?
Yeah, because they were 13-0 after winning the Big Ten. They're 14-0 now, so two more victories, they put them at 16-0.
Yeah, I mean, if you're 16-0 and you have wins in the playoff over Alabama in blowout fashion, if they beat Oregon, and then if, you know, really regardless of whoever they play, Ole Miss or Miami, either team has a much greater football history than what Indiana has. Miami certainly does. If they win either one of those games and they go 16-0, that's an all-time season, and they have the Heisman-winning QB.
So Miami has not won a national championship since 01. Ole Miss has never won it. Oregon has never won it. Indiana has never won it.
So that's why I think that the point that got brought up by Nick Kostos earlier this hour was a good one. Even though it looks like the long, long layoff hurt 7 of the 8 teams over the last 2 years that got that long layoff in the quarterfinal round. We are getting to see a playoff for the first time since I think it started back in 14-15 that does not include Alabama, Georgia, or Ohio State.
Great. Love it. We actually have some parity in college football. I don't know if I'd want that every year. Like, I'm tired of seeing Alabama consistently in the Final Four. I'm tired of seeing it with Ohio State, too. And, you know, Georgia has just been so consistently good. What we're seeing now, Donnie, is this. NIL and the transfer portal, where we thought that it was going to make the most rich teams, at least historically in college football, the dominant programs like Ohio State, the Michigans, the Alabamas, the Georgias, just like that, that would make them an even stronger power. And it would further heighten their abilities to be able to retain the roster and just run it back year after year after year and be great teams. And that has just not been the case. It's allowed Indiana, a school with not a good history of football, but a lot of money, to be able to step up to the plate. It's allowed Oregon, same thing. It's all coming down to money now, but it's allowed other teams that have really not been able to be in the conversation join the dance and be more competitive, to the point where there's not 5 teams that can win it anymore. There's now legitimately 10 to 12 that if they get in, they could actually win.
Yeah, that's something that I'm happily wrong about when it came to the NIL and transfer portal era of college football, at least, because I thought that it would be, well, you know, those teams that are already at the top, they're just going to get that much stronger and kind of run away more than they already were doing. And now we just see so much movement. I mean, it is absolutely mayhem. It's the wild, wild west. You know, kids just transfer left and right. I just saw another one that Chris Peak put out there. You know, one of the Pitt backup QBs, he's transferring to like his 5th school in 4 years or something. Maybe he can try somewhere in like the President's Athletic Conference next. That might benefit one of those teams that we cover, Austin.
So here's a fun, well, not fun for him or really for anybody, transfer nugget that I think is interesting from a Penn State player. And I know it's Penn State, but you'll get the reference here. King Mack is a safety that went to Penn State his freshman year. He then transferred to Alabama for the following season. He didn't like being at Alabama, so he transferred back to Penn State, said all these great things about the staff and Matt Campbell, and he had a great conversation with the coaching staff, and guess what he did last night, Donnie?
Transferred.
Entered the transfer portal. Yes. A lot of it is transactional. There's not a lot of loyalty left anymore, but I just hate that college football now is just it's now become a yearly 1-year contract for all the players.
It's just free agency after every single year. Sometimes not even that long.
It's not like there's a multi-year contract where now we're seeing like backup offensive linemen for like Pitt and Maryland that are announcing, hey, I'm coming back next year.
Yeah, that's
you
where
know? That's it's insane.
That's where it's really gotten odd. You're getting guys that have to announce their recommitment to a school. I also like that you see
we just actually got one with a local Whippeel product.
Uh-oh.
Quentin Martin, there was a lot of speculation if he was going to transfer or not, ran for over 100 yards in the Pinstripe Bowl. He will be back at Penn State next year. I'm surprised by that.
Ooh. Yeah, he did have a nice Pinstripe Bowl, and I mean, if he doesn't have that game, he's probably going elsewhere.
There's somebody in this building that was very adamant that he was likely going to transfer.
Yeah, I mean, somebody who has a closer relationship with him than you or I do.
Yep.
That's for sure. Yeah, so Chris Peak put this out there 3 hours ago. Pitt quarterback Cole Gonzalez is in the transfer portal.
You know where he went to high school?
Where did
Central
he go?
Catholic.
Okay, so he is the Central Catholic.
Yeah, kid. The Michigan linebacker.
Gonzalez transferred to Pitt in late spring.
Or I'm thinking of Cole Sullivan at Michigan. Disregard.
Okay.
Disregard.
Well, yeah, because I think the Gonzalez we were thinking of was Petey Jr.
Yeah.
Yeah. So Pitt quarterback Cole Gonzalez is in the transfer portal. He transferred to Pitt in late spring after spending the spring semester at Oklahoma. He started his career at Western Carolina. I mean, come on! Now we're getting, like, semesters. We're getting it down to semesters.
Yeah, semesters.
Next it's going to be weeks. Like, oh man, I spent 9 weeks at Pitt. Now I'm going to go spend 9 weeks at Penn State.
It's like a high school semester, Donnie. What'd you get in your grades for this 9-week quarter here?
Yeah, it's going to come down to that. soon enough. I mean,
did you find it weird that in high school we went by quarters? Like, you get an A for like the first 9 weeks, and the second 9 weeks maybe you get a B, and then it would all come together like a cumulative score. Why don't high schools and colleges just make it like semesters? Where like you have the first half and then the second half, and you balance it out with your scores and stuff like that. Why do we have four quarters in high school?
Something else that I also at least went through when I was at Greensburg-Salem that I liked was that we had block scheduling. So we did have classes that were, we only had four classes a day. We had like a fifth class that would only be like 45 minutes. And that was sort of like a, like an alternate period in a way, like a study hall type of thing. But four classes that were 90 minutes long, that is way nicer than, like, I don't know what Baldwin had, but like schools that have like eight classes a day that are all 45 minutes.
Yeah, we had, I think there were 45 minutes, eight classes a day.
That's just way too short. And I think, A, it sucks with like, I mean, just something as simple as homework. Because you get a 90-minute class, normally the teacher is wrapped up for the day after an hour, so he gives you like a half hour to work with. Imagine having a gym class in 45 minutes.
Yeah, because like,
you get to class, you have to change into your gym clothes, yep. You can, what, do the activity for 20 minutes, and then it's shower time. Unless you maybe happen to have gym at the very end of the day and you're like driving your own car home after, you don't have to worry about it.
Yeah, we actually did have an eighth period gym class at one point where if we wanted to dip out 10 minutes early, we weren't like allowed to, but sometimes depending on what was going on that day, we would. I was also a very frequent clock watcher. If like it was a very important class that like I knew that, or sometimes like AP English, we'd have like reading assignments and stuff like that. I wasn't the biggest reader.
And me either.
My favorite was when we were in round tables and we were like going over like, what did you learn in this chapter of the book? I don't know. What did SparkNotes tell me was in this chapter of the book?
Yeah.
And we would call on friends of ours that we knew had no idea what was going on. Or we'd like try to lead them into something where we'd say like, yeah, going off of what Tommy said, and then you'd like come up with something, and then if the teacher said like, yeah, nice point, I'd be like, yes, let's go.
Yeah, I was stuck in some of those classes with real brainiacs. Like if I got caught in like an AP English class, no thanks. My parents tried to push that on me, and maybe it benefited me down the road, I don't know, but that was me with a bunch of people way smarter than me.
Well, like, AP English was very good for me because I was able to improve as a writer. Like, that was really important.
Yeah.
But for whatever reason, Donnie, I cannot read, like, very long-form books in, like, a quick amount of time. Some people can just speed read through it.
Pony can read, like, a book in a day.
Yeah, like, it would take me a month and a half to be able to do that. For whatever reason, I just... Maybe it's just because I'm young and younger people, the attention span isn't as great, but I can't get through like a huge chapter book without spending like hours upon hours upon hours reading it.
What's next, Limits?
All right. Japanese third baseman Kazuma Okamoto, Donnie. Could he be signing with the Pirates? The posting window will close on Sunday at 5 p.m., He hit 248 home runs in 11 seasons in Japanese baseball. He's a six-time All-Star in Japan as well. And there are rumors and rumblings that it might be the Pirates. It might be the Angels. There are other couple of teams that are involved. My question to you is, would you rather have Okamoto or would you rather have Eugenio Suarez? And at this point, would you just take either or? Who cares?
I would definitely take either or. I mean, if you told me they got either guy, I would be... over the moon happy because I did my New Year's resolutions for the three main teams in town yesterday when I filled in the afternoon for the guys. And for the Pirates, mine was get a needle mover at third base, whether that be Okamoto or Eugenio Suarez, because I think either one could fill that void. I had Jason Mackey on yesterday afternoon, though, around 2:30, it does not sound like he has much confidence in them pulling off the Okamoto move. But he leaves the door open for somebody like Suarez. Now, if they can just improve that spot, I think they've had a pretty good offseason already. I would say a good offseason. I can, you know, say that Ben Cherington finally opened up some lights into what the Pirates could become. They look like they have a real lineup on paper, and you have to imagine they'll add Connor Griffin to that at some point too. I just want either, I want another impact bat. I think that would come at third base, and I think one of those two guys would be huge for them. Because if you can make a world where Jared Triolo is just like the guy that is a defensive upgrade anywhere on the diamond, that's how it should be. He should not be an everyday third baseman, which is the way it could be looking right now.
No, that would be terrible for them, especially offensively. It would be terrible. Like, we saw what great defense that with no offense gives you. I would be completely okay with pedestrian defense from Eugenio Suarez if I know he's going to hit 35 home runs for me and drive in like 100 runs. I would be completely fine with it. And that's the guy that I would go after. Like, Okamoto probably won't cost as much money as Suarez. It will be a longer form deal because he's 29 and Suarez is in his mid-30s. But whatever you have to do to add one more huge bat, you have to do whatever is necessary to do it, I think. You have to be willing to pay the price, which the Pirates have somewhat done this year, definitely more than previous years. But one final addition to this offense that is like actually like a needle mover, not, you know, signing Jose Iglesias to be your shortstop until Connor Griffin is here, even though that wouldn't be a terrible move. But you get my point. They need one more big-time bat in this lineup, and then we can go, oh, there's actually some length in it. Oh, opposing teams might actually fear this lineup when you have Suarez and Connor Griffin or Okamoto that are in it paired with what they already have.
Yeah, I was just responding to somebody on the YouTube chat who said, they've signed nobody. How are you giving them credit? They traded for a guy who had 31 home runs last season, and they signed another who hits like 15 to 20 every season.
Yeah.
I mean, yeah, they didn't sign Barry Bonds here, but they have done more this offseason than they've done in a long time. They signed their first outside free agent to a multi-year deal for the first time in almost 10 years.
Finally!
I mean, yes, the other off-seasons have been so bad that they have been deserving of getting crushed by the media and by the fans. But, I mean, come on. We can't act like they've done nothing here. They traded for a guy who instantly became their best offensive player.
Yeah. Pete Nakos of On3 saying, with the transfer portal officially open, this is how much impactful players out of the portal will cost your team. He includes, like, the wide receiver market is $400,000 to $1 million. Running back market, $350,000 to $1 million. Texter, is anyone getting a degree after all these transfers?
I don't know. That's
a great question.
Yeah, somebody asked me that yesterday. I mean, obviously, that's not the first goal for a lot of these kids.
No.
They're trying to get to the league. If they can take care of their education down the road, listen, I'm for them trying to live out their dream. If they can go back and get their education after the fact, then so be it. But I mean, you only really have a few years to make a big enough name for yourself to get into a professional league. That being said, with the eligibility and transfer portal and the craziness of that, there are guys that are older than you, Austin, and almost my age that are still playing college football. I saw a picture last night. The tight end for Ole Miss. I saw a picture of him going on Twitter because I missed that part pretty early in the game. The guy looked like he was 40. He had the hairline of Hulk Hogan.
Wow.
I don't know if you have seen him. I'll send you the picture. He looked like he was 40. I mean, come on.
You're not talking about Priscorn. He's in the league now.
No, it was a kid that played last night. He was playing last night. And I probably shouldn't call him a kid. By the way he looked, I think he's older than me.
One final thing here, Donnie. Here is the update from Ian Rappaport earlier today. Good Morning Football on TJ Watt.
TJ Watt trying to come back after surgery to repair a partially collapsed lung after a dry needling session in the team facility. There was some optimism earlier in the week, and to my knowledge, nothing has waned. The only concerning thing here for the Pittsburgh Steelers and T.J. Watt is that he has not been a full participant yet in practice. Today is Friday. If he is not a full participant today, then you really do wonder, is he going to be out there for a win and in all-important game for the Steelers? Again, Tomlin has said he's more optimistic this week than last week, but he also said, let the participation be our guide. T.J. has not yet been full, so I would say it's more wait-and-see mode for the star edge rusher than anything else.
So there wasn't really much there, but Rappaport quote tweeted it about an hour later saying, finally, it does appear T.J. Watt is on the brink of playing. We'll see what his participation is today, but sounds like he's nearly there.
It would be pretty disappointing if after all of this he doesn't at least dress and play a little bit on Sunday night. And Alex Highsmith has been really good. Nick Herbig in pass rush situations has been really good, and he's better against the run than he gets credit for. I say that pretty often. But I do think it would be a boost. If you can get T.J. Watt out there for 20 snaps, I think that would be
pretty big
for them.
I think it would probably be more than that, but even if you just have him be a situational guy on third downs or second and longs, those type of situations. Donnie, this guy does look old. He looks like he's 30.
That's what
in this picture, oh my word.
I'm 30. He looks 10 years older than me.
Well, I mean, he has like, his hairline is insane.
It's terrible.
It looks like Ric Flair.
It's terrible.